And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Rick Barraza.
And Rick, this is a momentous day. This is our first day filming together on the show.
Not only that,
but it's also our 5-year anniversary of This Week on Channel 9. And Dan is so bummed that he can't be here today.
I know, and this was the big day. 5 years. You guys have done a lot. I've only been on a couple times, but it's been a great show. I've learned a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a fun ride. I remember Dan coming to me with the idea, 5 years and 2 weeks ago. And then 2 weeks later, we're filming. We're doing all the edits ourselves. Obviously, we've come a long way since then. It's fun to go back and watch some of those early episodes.
I'll have to go back and see what you guys were so passionate about 5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this, I don't know, this Windows Forms thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
So let's jump right into it. Some big news coming out. Hopefully everyone's seen this by now, but we at the ALM Summit this week announced that we are fully embracing Git as an alternative source control provider within Team Foundation Server. And we also have a first-class experience for working with Git repositories right within Visual Studio.
Yeah, that's really, really exciting. And you filmed one of the videos on this, right?
Yeah, recently? We did. Martin Woodward and I, friend of the show.
That's a great video to kind of get up to speed. It got me up to speed on what's going on there. I mean, multiple things. Git's really been getting a lot of popularity the past year. I've been working with a lot of the projects, so this was great for me hearing that, going to be setting that up.
Yeah, and I think there's two important things to keep in mind. You know, the traditional, what we're calling Team Foundation version control, which is a centralized, non-DVCS system, that's still alive and well. There's a team hard at work at making improvements to that. And that's also the same team that's working on the DVCS option for you within Team Foundation Server. So both are alive and well, and both have their own kind of sweet spots for where you would want to use one versus the other. And then the other thing that I would say about that is that what was the other thing I was going to say about that?
About the controls inside Visual Studio?
Yeah, so right within Visual Studio, whether or not you're connecting to one of our Git repositories within Team Foundation Service that we're lighting up, or Bitbucket, or GitHub, or any of these other repositories,
right,
you can clone it right there. It's really a great experience, and it's designed to give you both flexible options.
Yeah, not that one's replacing the other, but I've been finding myself working a lot more projects of different styles, even on C++, right? With OpenCV or some of the rendering stacks we've been looking at, getting them playing on Visual Studio. It's just kind of how the world is right now, right? Some people are all in on TFS, right? But you start working on some of these things, having that in Visual Studio so I can clone it, I can manage my syncs and then eventually push it up. Really, really nice.
Yeah. And Git has a huge popularity in the open source community where maybe I want to work with your project, but then take it in my own direction.
Exactly.
And then occasionally come back and grab something else that you've done that I do like for my project. So anyway, check that out. We also have a Getting Started tutorial that will take you through how you get started with Git. You can start using that today with the Team Foundation service. We have announced that it will be coming in the future to on-premises versions of Team Foundation Server, but no time frame to announce yet. And then this also takes you through how you go get the Visual Studio tools for Git and install that into Visual Studio. All editions, actually, Express on up of 2012.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Great. Next one.
So another big piece of news here is that the CTP2 of Visual Studio 2012 Update 2, that's a mouthful, was announced this week, and you can download it. One thing to point out is that this is not a go-live CTP, so it's intended for you to put maybe on a virtual machine or a spare machine that you might have. Of course, you should wait until the final version of Update 2 is available before you put that on kind of your everyday development machine. But there's a lot of stuff in here, and I brought my Surface to remind myself. We've got Brian Harry's blog post open here. The first is that you'll see that in Agile planning with respect to Team Foundation Server, we have this new tagging system. So oftentimes, you're working with a work item, you want to be able to easily tag it to say, oh, this is a bug that we found in Firefox, right? Mm-hmm. So that later on you can go back and say, show me all the bugs that affect Firefox users. Tagging gives you one ability for you to do that. Of course, you can imagine other ways that you might be able to use tags as well. Quality enablement, now you can actually use the test functionality where you're authoring and running manual tests. You can use that straight from a web browser. So this is really important when you don't have Microsoft Test Manager installed, such as on non-Windows machines. Mm-hmm. You can still get access to that functionality. So if you're testing, a Linux desktop or something like that, you can do that. Blue theme, we'll talk about a little later.
Yep. Line of business.
Yeah, line of business. We brought fakes and stubs down into premium, so that makes it easier for you to kind of mock out things that maybe are otherwise untestable with respect to your code. Ton of stuff in here. We'll talk about Blend in just a minute.
And the code maps, which code have been map, in there, yeah. You said before, but...
You know, I'm trying to remember if code map is something that made it into update one and is just revised in update two, but code map really gives you a really nice ability for you to trace the dependencies between your code, really nice visualization experience.
Yeah, on this one, it kind of popped on my radar here. It looks like it's a great feature to keep adding more things to it. And there was one more on...
The version control experience when you're on Team Foundation Web Access is really nice. We've got a great experience in there. Check out Brian's post to see more. But now we even have image diffs, so you can mm-hmm. see, hey, you know, Rick checked in this particular file. Here's what it looked like before. Here's what it looks like now. So just a lot of innovation going on, regardless of whether or not using Git or TFS as your underlying version control system.
I think, and their second update, kind of so quickly after the first update, they've really committed to this kind of
quarterly deployment. Cadence.
2012 came out, boom, boom, boom. I mean, they're just coming out gangbusters. Every update's coming up with a ton of stuff, and they're just... They're just bringing it.
Yep, exactly. There's not a dull moment around here anymore. Yeah. As an evangelist, I used to be able to kind of, you know, after we shipped our RTM, I'd take some time off. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
So, yeah, it's definitely fun.
Next one, WPF Silverlight and Sketchflow support in Blend. Now, this was really cool for us. This comes with the update, too, that we just finished talking about. But I think we wanted to call out specifically, because this was a big feature. For me, it was a lot. Working on coding for fun, right? Mm-hmm. It's very different from when we were working enterprise software. You know, now we're building robots. But back in the day when we were building these WPF applications and everything, Blend was kind of one of your go-to things if you're mm-hmm. doing it big corporate settings, even just small, quick sketches, right? Blend was a very, very powerful tool. And recently, a lot of the new Blend, now that comes in Visual Studio, it's all focused on Windows Store applications. But sometimes we've still got a... You know, .NET's still there. It's still very viable. Right. Silverlight, Sketchflow was a great tool. So finally, they've kind of brought it all back in together, right? Mm-hmm. So they needed to separate it while they did a massive amount of rewriting and reworking and kind of really getting it up to speed. And now they've brought back all the features that we've known and loved for a while, right? So I'm really happy about this.
Yeah.
For me, this is a good thing.
And I love that it's integrated with Visual Studio now. It's no longer a separate tool that I have to launch. So you get a lot of benefits just by being integrated in Visual Studio. Like I can check my code straight into mm-hmm. source control using Team Explorer and so on. So definitely go check that out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So this is a nice article, just a really quick and dirty, like, hey, I've built my app. How do I get my app down to my Windows RT device? So I've got my Surface RT over here. How do I actually install the app that I've created in Visual Studio? Obviously, I'm not using Visual Studio on my Surface mm-hmm. RT device. It's a desktop application. How do I actually take it out of here and push it over to the device so that I can start testing with it? So, you know, this is a concept known as sideloading. Just a really nice, quick and dirty article by Dries here that talks about how to do that.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're having those types of articles, right? Tim here had a great post in terms of doing remote deploy on your Surface app to Visual Studio, right? So I always go back to that. It's one of those things, like maybe every couple months, mm-hmm. I want to test it completely on my Surface.
Right.
So people like that putting their blog posts. It's a simple post, but it's one of those nice to have.
Exactly.
Marketing your favorites.
Bookmark it. Yep.
Next.
So LexDB, you know, this is yet another option that's available for you as a database storage solution on Windows Phone 8. So, you know, we've talked in the past about SQL CE. SQL CE is nice, but it's not available on Windows 8. There's SQLite. Well, LexDB is as they say here in the post, is throwing another kind of, you know, name into the ring here. It's an object-oriented database. I personally haven't worked with it, but it seems to be pretty popular. So just another thing that you can go start working with if you're a Windows Phone developer.
Absolutely. Next one. This was an interesting article. I think you and I had some time debating it before we started shooting it anyways, right? And I don't think we still come to a definitive answer, right? But basically, this is a blog post written by a guy here who looks like an MVP.
Shai. Yeah, it's a friend of mine, Shai, out of Israel, actually. Very, very sharp guy.
So he did this post, the WinRT Toast Notifications from Desktop Applications. And if you go through this website and you go through his post, he's basically showing, okay, here from a .NET app, mm-hmm. here's how you go in. You're trying to use the...
A desktop app.
A desktop .NET app, right? Mm-hmm. To go into fire the traditional or the new Windows 8 Toast Notifications there. So I was reading through it, and I think you and I, the conversation we were having, kind of the hacker in me said, this is awesome, right? That he's showing you how to take advantage of it. And then the solution designer in me stepped back and said, oh, I'm not really sure how I feel about that in terms of just giving it a pure green flag, because a lot of the design paradigms that we have in Windows 8 and kind of all of our new the design principles and winning as one and kind of having search contracts integrated with Toast and the tiles. So again, the hacker loved that he's doing it there, and I'm glad that it's done. The designer in me is like, I'm not sure if I can just start pulling things, you know, pulling individual Lego pieces out of this new design principles that we have. So I'm still undecided on it. I'm glad we're talking about it. But what do you think?
Well, I think it's a good example. So I think your argument is we're kind of confusing two user paradigms here. From my perspective as a user, I see this as, hey, I can get my notifications in kind of the same, or my toasts, if you will, in the same UI style that I'm used to for the rest of my applications. And if I go to, you know, turn them off, if I swipe in from the right, I can actually turn off those notifications centrally for everything. Whereas if I wasn't going through WinRT for those notifications, then I might have a couple of different places where I need to go turn off those notifications. So I see it as an upside, but I can definitely see where it becomes this slippery slope that as a designer or as a dev designer, you have to start thinking, is this the right direction to go? But nevertheless, kudos to Shai for always being innovative and coming up with interesting things that you can do.
Figuring out how to do it. That was the big thing.
Yeah. So this is a really interesting post. I'm not going to spend a lot of detail going into it on the show, but basically this is a post by a guy who was challenging some of his friends around the idea of, you know, why do we need NuGet? NuGet is nice when it goes and grabs all these dependencies, but that's never really kind of been an issue for this guy, Dylan Smith. And then he started talking to some customers and some other folks that he works with, and he realized when you start doing parallel development and you're working on one version of code and I'm working on a different version and your customer has deployed this other version, that's one example where NuGet really shines, because NuGet can do all the heavy lifting and say, hey, you know, this package needs this specific version of this dependency on this particular machine, or when you have this particular branch loaded.
Yeah.
So it's just a really nice article that goes through and makes the argument for NuGet.
Good. We'll check that out. Next, we have, now this was great. This is Microsoft launches modern IE Internet Explorer testing resource. This is a fantastic, fantastic resource online that we just saw it internally, right? Or I just did earlier this week. It goes out live. We went in, we played with it. One feature alone that made it worth it for me is they have just a very simple scan a web page. You go in there, you type in your URL, right? For me, of course, everybody's going to use their own website first, right?
Right.
So, you know, ourbrowser.com or whatever, you scan it, and right away it says, you know, here's all the things that you should be watching out for. A lot of resources, a lot of packages. The Internet Explorer team, right? The Visual Studio updates we talked about have just been on a tear with their updates. The IE team recently, they've just been on fire. They had that viral video that came out.
Oh, yeah.
This Children of the 90s.
Yep.
This thing's come out. They've just been gangbusters the past week. I mean, major props to them and the team. This modern.ie website, really, really liked it. There are a lot of great resources all in one place. I'm really impressed with what they've been doing the past year.
Yeah, and they have virtual machines available for you to download that have different versions of IE available. They have made those virtual machines available for different virtualization stacks. So if you're not using a Microsoft virtualization stack, maybe you're using VirtualBox, you can go get the instructions for how do you get this working within VirtualBox. So just lots of really great stuff coming out of them. And you know, they take compatibility and testing very, very seriously over there.
Yeah, great.
Visual Studio database projects. Rick, I don't know if this is something you've had a chance to work on, but this is a technology that I fell in love with a few years ago. It used to be something that the Visual Studio team worked on, and it became so successful that the SQL Server team kind of took up ownership of this project. But I like this walkthrough that one of our MVPs, Gunnar Peepman, goes through and talks about, because it's really just a reminder of how powerful this technology is. I had multiple customer meetings this week where they were asking for something like this, and they just weren't aware that it existed. The very quick elevator pitch for why you should care about developer database projects from my perspective is you can point it at a SQL Server database. It will reverse engineer your schema, put that into a project system that you can then version control, you can work on it in parallel, and then when you get ready to push out changes, it will actually do a target analysis of the database that you have running in production, come up with the DAC or the script that's necessary for you to actually turn your production database into what you've modeled in development. Yeah. And then you can also push this out to a dev or test environment and have unit tests that run against that environment. You can even generate thousands or millions of rows of sample data as well, and you can make this data, you know, pseudo-realistic if you want to. So if you know that this is a zip code, you can make sure that it conforms to the regular expression for a zip code. So just lots of really nice functionality in here, and this walkthrough takes you through, if you haven't been exposed to it before, it takes you through why these are such powerful projects.
Yeah, I love those types of walkthroughs, because I think you're right, a lot of it is an exposure issue, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been here a year now, right? And there's still things popping up I didn't even know existed, yeah. You know, out there. And yet for everything that you know brand new, somebody else has been like a massive fan of it for the past several years.
Absolutely.
Something like that.
So yep.
Articles like that in real life makes it practical and gets you up to speed very quickly.
Absolutely. Which brings us to something totally non-related,
right.
Multi-threading.
Multi-threading demystified. Actually, I think it's related in that it's filling the same niche, right? Multi-threading, it's one of those things. This particular tutorial, we're calling it out because I think you did a great job on this. Who did this? Well,
the name's hidden from the screen post.
All right.
So.
But the URL will be on the blog post. Check it out. Really, really good write-up on multi-threading demystified. I love seeing tutorials like this. It takes you at a very high level, walks you all the way down, gives you code samples, gives you a nice summary. Specifically, multi-threading demystified for .NET. Applications, right? And that's really the focus on this. Concepts of threading, how to implement multi-threading specifically in .NET, right? And then being thread safe, and then, you know, deadlocks. And just at a very high level, really, really like tutorials on that. Sometimes you want to find something, and you'll go in and you're going to wade through like pages and pages and pages, mm-hmm. just to find a simple answer, to find big picture. Really, really enjoyed that article. So glad we're giving it some shout out.
Great. And so speaking of design, we are this week announcing that the Visual Studio 2012 blue theme is available. So this is something that you can download as part of CTP2. And so that's just really cool. A lot of people that were interested in getting their hands on this and seeing it become something that's like formalized as part of the product as well.
What theme do you use?
I usually just use the default white theme. I should probably switch to the black theme because it uses less power and I'm very green.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I just don't take the time to customize these things.
Yeah, that color theme, I will probably download it and then spend hours tweaking and customizing. And at the end, just go back to the white theme.
Oh, really?
That's all usually
okay.
End up doing.
Nice.
So. Next one.
I thought about doing my alma mater, University of Florida. Orange and blue. So this is a great post. I loved this post. You know, there have been several posts over the years that talk about why, as a developer, we should care about virtualization for dev test environments. But this post did a phenomenal job of going really, really deep in a very easily digestible way. It's by Ken Kilty, and basically he makes the argument for why Hyper-V is something that you, as a developer, it's really easy to access, even under Windows 8 mm-hmm. client now. Assuming you have the right hardware, Slack-capable processors, you can start taking advantage of Hyper-V. And he explains everything from networking to, you know, how do you set up your disks, to what kind of system requirements, how to set up the BIOS, all that sort of stuff, so that it makes it really easy for you to say, hey, I'm writing my code on my, you know, kind of host machine, but every once in a while I want to lob it over and push it out to this unaffected VM where maybe I don't have Visual Studio, I don't have all these other dependencies. Let me see what it looks like running, you know, somewhere else. So just great article. It's a part one article. I'm assuming he's coming out with part two later.
Yeah,
I'll be looking
for
that.
Awesome.
Yeah. Brings us to
our pick of the week. So my pick of the week, Bob Taco Industries. This is Michael McLaughlin. Now, we covered some of his work because he helped a lot on Maelstrom.
Maelstrom, for people that don't remember?
It was Brian Peake, the Coding for Fun, Brian Peake, Clint Rutgers, and I. We created our first C++ DX game. Mm-hmm. But of course, since it was Coding for Fun, we had to create our first sample huge. So it had the big projector. It was using stereoscopic, which was a new feature in Windows 8. So it's able to project things out in stereo. So we were using 3D projectors. We were using touch. And it was basically the world's most over-engineered game of Pong,
right?
And that's still online on our website. But we got into some rendering stacks. And Michael McLaughlin came in and just saved the day. I mean, the guy just really, really knows what he was doing. He's written a great book that I think we've referenced here before in terms of C++ mm-hmm. for C# developers, right? Again, very succinct. So those links are there as well. But now what he's come in, he's done this Windows Store DirectX C++ sample base. So he's abstracted out a lot of concepts. We're seeing more and more of this go on. So anything that touches basically with C++ or DirectX, where it's giving more abstraction layers so that creative coders can come in and start working with this. Roberto Sonino has recently done a similar thing where he's extended out some of the, it basically gets you up and running on DirectX very, very quickly, mm-hmm. right? And so we're seeing that there's so many cool tools, there's just not a lot of exposure to it. So work like Roberto's, work like Michael's that we've just done, whenever it comes out and it's really awesome, definitely want to show attention to it so we can fill in that gap, because we want more designers, more creative coders, more people moving from C#, you know, to C++ to play with DirectX. It's so powerful mm-hmm. once you start doing those things off the GPU. So I'm a really, really big fan of it. And download sample, check it out.
Awesome.
Your pick of the week.
My pick of the week. So this is for anybody out there that has a Windows Phone 8 and did not get a Nokia phone. Of course, Nokia ships with a lot of really great apps, Nokia Drive being one of them. But I got an HTC device. I really like my HTC 8X. I love it. I have to say, initially, I was a little disappointed with the Maps experience. Mm-hmm. So on Windows Phone 7, there's a pretty nice, you know, out-of-the-box mapping experience. It does turn-by-turn directions and kind of voice navigation if you have something. Mm-hmm. If you go the wrong way, it says press here, tap here to recalculate. Yeah. A lot of those features actually were not included out-of-the-box with Windows Phone 8. Hmm. And now I know why. Now I know it's because Nokia Drive is actually available for all Windows Phone 8 devices, regardless of whether or not you're using a Nokia device. So you can download it from the store. It's listed as Nokia Drive Plus Beta, so I've been using it for a while. It works really, really well, even though it's in beta. But just in my experience, hands down, must-have app for anyone who's running Windows Phone.
Yeah, I think I've been a little spoiled because I do have my Lumia, and we use the Nokia Drive all the mm-hmm. time. So great, everybody who doesn't have it now can grab it as well.
Yes, absolutely. Awesome. So Rick, thanks for being on the show with me today.
And congratulations on 5-year anniversary.
Thank you,
once again. You and Dan.
Yes, absolutely. And we will see you next week.
Great.